Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Hello, and welcome to The Power of Reinvention, my podcast that I have now had on the air for, it's been about a year and a half. As many of you know, The Power of Reinvention podcast came after the release of my book, Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, which came out right at the beginning of the pandemic. Ironically, it became the guidebook for now. It became the book that I never thought would be so relevant, even though I thought it was fabulous to be able to tell people stories about great reinventions, and as I like to call them, aha moments that they've had in their lives. And all of a sudden, with the pandemic, it sort of forced everybody to sit back and think about what they were doing, what they wanted to be doing in all parts of their lives. And so to have a podcast where I get to interview incredible people every week, share their stories, and have them share some of the great insights that have helped them get through interesting pivots, challenges, nuanced moments in their lives is really fun. We get such incredible feedback from our audience because they can relate to the stories that they hear on this podcast. So I'm super thrilled to introduce today's guest, Carrie Warburg-Block, who I found out is working with some of the most special and dearest people in my business world as well, we just discovered. So it just makes us even that much more connected. And I have to shout out to Tammy for putting us in touch with each other. So thank you, Tammy Holtzman, for connecting us in the first place. But I want to share a little bit about Carrie's story, but say hi, Carrie, before I delve into it.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So Carrie, an unlikely disruptor, challenged an industry that by its very nature is toxic. She is the founder and CEO of Earthkind. And Carrie discovered that 98% of pest control solutions sold were poison and kill methods. So she set out to invent a better solution, plant-based pest control powered by nature. I'm going to let her tell you more details about that story, but I have to share that, and she may not go into this in too much. Well, she may go into this in more detail. But Carrie was once a mom on food stamps. She started Earthkind with nothing more than a package of garden seeds and a vision, and has built it into the seven-figure company it is today. So she's going to share her story for all of our wondering minds as how one actually does that. With her first book, Gathering Around the Table, A Story of Purpose-Driven Change Through Business, which was published in March 2021, which also during the pandemic, I have to point out, Carrie has achieved a lot, including nationwide product distribution, carbon neutrality, ingredient and supply chain transparency, the invention of the first CPG bioplastic, and has helped lower consumer reliance on toxic pest control methods by 10%. That is unbelievable, Carrie. Selected as an Ernst & Young entrepreneurial winning woman, Carrie has advised the SBA, Congress, and the White House on policy that impacts women in business, receiving the 2019 GMDC Retail Champions of Change Award for her role as an inspirational industry leader. She's been featured in CNBC, The New York Times, Huffington Post, and Forbes. So without further ado, Carrie, let's delve into this conversation. I have so many questions and things that I want to talk about. So let's do this. So I have to say, one of my favorite questions is going to take you way back in time, way back before you started the business. Who was little Carrie? What was it that you dreamed of, that you thought you'd be doing with your life? Are you doing anything remotely close to where you thought? I thought I was going to be a ballerina when I was 5 years old. Well, thank goodness for the world that that didn't work out. What about you?
Oh my goodness. Looking back, I was a kid of two contrasts, really. I loved to wonder. I loved magic. I loved to imagine things. I was always in a fairy tale world of like wanting to invent things, wanting to change things, re-envision the way that the world was. And then the other side of that is I saw the things I really didn't like. And I go into this in my book, but I saw this shampoo commercial and this girl, little girl, she put these suds in her hair and made this crown. And you know, this was a long time ago, but I was like, I have to have that shampoo. And I told my parents, I need to have that shampoo. I was sold hook, line, and sinker. I finally got that shampoo. Got it, tried to make the crown like I saw, because she was looking magical, like, oh, look at this. She's got her own little kingdom in the bathtub. And anyway, all of a sudden it burned my skin. It burned my eyes. It just didn't work that well. My hair kind of was sticky afterwards. And I was like totally let down. And I really thought about consumerism different because I saw this ad. And as things aspirationally that I wanted to be. But then when I had that experience, it was just like, I felt so ripped off. So that's a memory that stands out, but it really stuck with me through life. So I started to make all my own ingredients and things like that.
So really an entrepreneur from a very young age. And when you went to school, college, you know, high school, college, university, did that put you on a certain, like, you know, some people go straight into business knowing they're going to build that career for themselves. Others are like, oh, I'll do English lit and poli sci or communications. You know, was there sort of a sense at that point that you would really turn these inventions and that imagination of yours into business?
No, not really. I went to a different school every year of my life until I got to high school. It was just a product that my dad wasn't military, but we were just moving around a lot. He was in corporate America. He was an entomologist, worked for pest control companies. So we kept moving and he'd get a better job and we lived all over the place. So I never really got a good foothold in education. In fact, I barely made it through. I think my junior year, they said, Carrie, you're not going to graduate unless you really crack down and do really well. So I started doing better, and I never thought that college was even an option for me. So I really didn't even go that route. I didn't take the SAT test. And then as I started to get, you know, into the years and believing more and more in myself, I was like, I'm going to do this. So I graduated from college when I was 40 and I got a degree in business management.
Amazing. So tell me a bit about what led you to this business. I have so many questions, but I think sort of encapsulating it in where you are today, and then we'll kind of go back to milestone moments. What led you to this business? Because, you know, I know it's an amazing story and I know you tell it in your book, and I'll make sure that we include the link to that in the episode so people can tap into that. But what really led you to this space? It's such an unusual space.
Yeah, it really is. I envisioned myself selling organic produce. I was living on a farm. I had this little potpourri business and like, two people coming over, employees helping with that. And I had this accident at a farmer's market, and a 72-year-old lady on a touring bike with a sidecar came in, hit me, broke my femur. And I was basically on my back for an entire year. I died for 3 minutes. So there was like a big aha moment when that happens, because I woke up and I really thought I'd lost my leg. I signed for them to take it. I still had it, but it was a long road to recovery. And you start asking yourself questions and you start thinking very differently, because that first moment was, okay, well, why am I alive? And the worst part of it, the doctor had this amazing experience. He was an atheist and there was an angel. And it changed like his whole life story after that. I got nothing. I saw nothing. I was just, I woke up with this pain and I'm going, that's really interesting, but I'm alive. And then I started thinking, well, there must really be a reason here. And then I thought, I started to thinking, okay, what is there one thing that only I can do in this world? Nobody else can do. There must be like this purpose for me. And it wasn't like aspirational at that point. It became very practical. Yeah. And I knew growing up with my father, he was an entomologist. So I'd watch his trials and tests and we'd always argue. I'd say, why do you have to kill everything? Why do you have to poison everything? And he said, Carrie, that's how you make money. That's what a business model is. Mm. That is what this industry does. And it pays the bills. And I said, but isn't that like going to catch up with us? Isn't that wrong? Where does the poison go? And I knew a little bit because I was thinking analytically at a young age about it. Yeah. It's like, there is no runoff. Where does it go? And it never made sense to me. And then here I came back. My father had died that same year. So he wasn't even there to talk to about it.
Sorry.
And, I had this terrible problem with rodents on my farm and they were getting into our stuff. And I'm like, I called all the companies and they said, no, we don't have anything that would be natural or non-kill. You know, I wanted something humane, something safe, but something that got them rid of them, kept them out of there. I really didn't want to trap them and poison them. And it was just gross and messy and all of it. And they kind of laughed at me. Well, they did. They're like, you know what, lady? Just spend $3, buy the poison, be done with it.
Yeah. Like stop overthinking it, right?
Yeah. Ridiculous. So I thought, you know, hey, maybe that's my one thing. Maybe it will all invent something. Maybe I can make this a success and help other farm wives keep their tractors rodent free. And that was my first invention. I mean, my real invention where I said, okay, this is going to be a patented product. I'm going to get this federal EPA registered. I'm going to create an entire.
Let me ask you, sorry to interrupt, but what did you know about doing all of those things? I mean, who knows that? I mean, there's one thing you learn in school, but and I think honestly, and I ask you that question because I think it is the fear of the unknown that paralyzes so many people and stops them from pursuing these types of fantasies, dreams, ventures, businesses. So, you know, good for you for having the gumption to kind of overcome that. But yeah, how did you know what to do? Did you research it? Did you have friends business?
I started to ask questions. And one question that was really helpful to me is I'd ask people, okay, what don't I know that I need to know to do this? And it was really powerful. So I started to focus the questions on what I didn't know that I needed to know. And I did a lot of classes. Like I went to SBA and SCORE and I learned about bookkeeping. I took an inventor's class and it was pretty amazing because I was one of the only females in there and I was one of the only people that wasn't a college engineer.
Right.
And, you know, my invention ended up making it and it's still, all these years later, we still laugh about it and I still stay in touch with some of these people that had, you know, their inventions. But I just took it a step at a time and now you have the internet. People can do a search on anything and get there so much faster than when I did it because I had to sit in the patent library and
right. Well, that's why I was asking because, you know, I have friends now who are like, oh, it was midnight. I was on the computer in my pajamas and I found contracts and I researched pricing for things. You know, people can open businesses overnight on the internet just with the tools at their fingertips. So that may not have been the case with what you were dealing with at the time.
Yeah. And I had to sell things too, because we had like no money. So I sold my camper. I had like a 1968 Pathfinder camper. I loved going camping. I sold my pack horse. I'd ride my horse up in the mountains. I sold that. And so that gave me enough money to get started and to get some samples. And then I applied for some grants and I went around and I was a shy, kind of introverted person, but I learned to go out and share my vision. And I got over the fear when I made it about where I wanted to take this thing. It was more about
that's an amazing statement. I mean, really, you just said so many things. I feel like I want to go back and kind of unpack a few things. First of all, you sold things that were so important to you. It wasn't just like, oh, there's a great painting on the wall. I don't know where it's from or who it came from. And it has no sentimental value, but it's worth something. Like, you sold things that were important to you to invest into yourself, which mm-hmm. says a lot about, you know, sometimes we look to others to invest in our companies and new business ventures, but we're not willing to give up our creature comforts or compromise. It's like, you know, I want to start a company and I want to be paid like the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Well, that may not be the case. We have to do our own diligence and do our own work and sort of live the hard knocks life sometimes to invest in something we believe in and to get others to believe. I have skin in the game. I sold my thing. I'm asking you to invest in me. This is how much I believe in it, right? So that's mm-hmm. huge that you did that. And the fact that you sort of had this introverted personality and yet you understood how to come out from behind that to make it about the business and the greater good of what you were doing mm-hmm. and not make it about you. I mean, just to have that insight for yourself is so commendable, because we can't all get out of our own way sometimes. And we may want to build a business, but we have to be that person that can walk in a room, that can talk about our business, that can present it to someone, that can talk to the media. So was that hard for you to overcome? Were there tools or motivational, podcasts you listened to? Or what was it that helped you through that?
I went to Toastmasters, and that was super helpful for me because I learned the technical aspects of how to do it and timing mm-hmm. and just the things that you need to do to be respectful of people's time. Another thing I did is I took this course. It was a Tony Robbins thing, and Gary Vee was there.
Right.
And I immediately went home and I was like, that is the ticket. I'm going to get on social media. I'm going to get a website. I'm going to do this whole entire digital business. And we were one of the very early pioneers in digital marketing, one of the first in the country
in this category or just overall.
Overall, wow. We were an early, early adopter, because you think about it, I'm sitting in Western North Dakota on a farm. How do I reach people?
Did you have internet?
A lot of time back then, a lot of it we didn't. And I put in these little 2x2 ads.
Wow.
But then social media came out. So we got on very, very early. And then we'd able, to drive the business to the retailers for our products. And I didn't have to staff up and have a sales team. And we just very recently, all these years later, 35,000 retailers are hiring an internal sales team because the demand has been growing the business. So we built it very differently too, but it was customer centric for sure. And I was thinking, what can I do without any money and investing a lot into the infrastructure?
Right. And you've probably grown the category. I mean, who's mm-hmm. nipping at your heels? What are the competitors? Who are there, those bigger companies that are kind of watching you and kind of going, hey, what are you doing?
Well, it was kind of funny because one of the things, it's kind of an advantage, I guess, being a small newcomer, everybody thought, well, she'll never make it. She's not she doesn't have a PhD. That was a big thing in this industry. It's just kind of a standard need. You have to have a PhD, you have to be an entomologist, so on and so forth. I'm like, okay, well, my dad was, I hire him. Right. So we have entomologists that work for us. But it was really interesting. It was such an exciting moment when Procter & Gamble came into the category. And they were the first big one to come in, and it really validated it because I'd showing these retailers and they're like, yeah. Well, we were still such a niche.
Right.
And it still is a niche, non-toxic. I mean, it's still, 85% toxic out there, but people want it. So there's all this white space. So
I think
it's really a fun time.
Right. Well, it is. I mean, there is such a growing demand. I think when we spoke weeks ago, I mentioned to you a girlfriend that owns a business that's in I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's in New Hampshire, and it's called We Feel Good, and it's a refill, recycle, reusable, you know, boutique store where people go in with their jars and their refillable bottles, you know, and people who are really trying to make a difference and impact the way we're living and our responsibility to our world. And so, you know, you're way ahead of the curve. And hopefully educating people, especially with the power of what you're doing on social media and being able to give people a chance to share and reshare that kind of information. But you are such an extraordinary, like I get chills when I just think about what you've done and the example that you are to, you know, A, women in business, the female entrepreneur, the introvert that put the business first and said, by hook or by crook, I'm going to make this happen, you know, to heck with me, I'll figure it out, that you found the solutions going to Toastmasters, like doing things that instead of saying, oh, I could never do it because I'm too shy, or I could never do it, I don't know the business. And that is such an easy escape route for so many of us. But the way you leaned into the business is just such a shining example of what happens when we do. And, you know, like I've had two conversations with you and your joy, your smile, your genuine commitment to what you're doing just feel like they really are your guiding principles that enable you to build and do what you do, which is incredible. And I just really commend you on that. It's like such an honor to know you and to see this trajectory that you've been on. Where do you see yourself taking it? Like, is there a kind of milestone of in 5 years we want to be doing X, Y, and Z, or there are other categories, or I have this whole other business that I actually have been wanting to build for 10 years as well. You know?
Yeah. There's all of those things. You know, one of the most important things, and it's a brand pillar of ours, is to be pragmatic. So, okay, we look at what is the need out there? What is the unmet need for household pest control that's not toxic? Because most everything is still toxic. So, you know, we basically do our work around what the customer need is.
Yeah.
So I don't even think of it in terms of if I'm going to be running the company. I think of it in terms of how can I shepherd and steward this brand to become everything that it can be.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's almost like it's crowdsourced. Yeah. It's not just, okay, I'm going to make this plan. It's what does the world need from us right now? And I ask my employees that routinely, and that's how we come up with some of our marketing programs. And we're all very collaborative. I mean, it's like everybody is a piece of that mission.
Right.
And has a say in it. So, there's other categories most certainly we can go into. We're America's number one pest prevention brand.
Right.
But it's amazing the things that pop up the bigger that a company grows. But for me, it's like... you know, I need to feel joy, whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I still use that as a path.
Great.
And it helps me to make decisions. And, you know, I'm a woman of faith too. So I know if I'm put in a situation, I have a lot of faith that I'm going to be able to figure it out and we're going to make it. And as a leader, I think that's so important because sometimes there's no clear path what's next, right? But like through COVID, I was able to lead our teams and we had no fear. And we looked forward to seeing each other and we had this knowing that we were going to come through this.
Right. You also had a purpose in the business that you were building that gave you a reason to wake up and contribute to mankind every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, which is a pretty special thing. What would you say some of the biggest challenges looking back What would you say the most challenging moment or moments, were there times where you said, I can't do this anymore, I've got to throw in the towel, we're not going to meet our budgets, were there lots of hard moments like that?
Lots and lots of times, especially in the early years, it was really, really hard. And I heard your first million is your most difficult. And I truly believe that. Because when I look back, it was, you can do repeatable things after that point, but you have to, that first million can be really hard, but definitely figuring out how to make all the ends meet is really challenging, and being visionary at the same time as being operational, which is required as a growing and scaling company. That's been really challenging. And then the people, because I've made leadership mistakes, and I choose not to regret them, but learn from them, right? And those are hard lessons too.
Yeah. One of the fun questions I love to ask at the end of almost every one of my shows is, if you were to have a dinner party and be able to invite three or four people that have impacted you, influenced you, that you'd love to have sitting around just over, breaking bread and having a bottle of wine and being able to just sit for hours and have a good conversation. Are there a few key people that you'd love to have at that table?
Who would they be? Jane Goodall for one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, just so love what she's doing. Lynn Twist is another one.
Tell us who Lynn Twist is.
She founded Pachamama Alliance, and she's given a voice to Indigenous people.
Okay.
And helping them make laws so they can have the sovereignty of their own land and their own space. And I'm just a huge proponent and believer in that, because that's kind of in essence, too, of where we started with being a farmer. Like, how the heck do we make a living doing all this?
Right.
It's like, how is it even possible? And I'm so happy to see people empowered.
Yeah. And anybody else? Dead or alive? Well, male or female?
Well, I would love to have dinner with my dad. That would be amazing.
Oh, he'd be so proud of you, Carrie. Oh, my goodness. To see what you have done and how far you've come.
Yeah. And him being in the industry before I was, I haven't been able to ask him. Other than seeing the scientific side of it and the work that he did, I learned a lot from that, but not the business side of it.
Amazing. What a conversation that would be. Wow. I love that. I love that. Well, look, I'm just so delighted that we've connected. We have multiple points of connection in our lives that we now know about, which is really precious, and I just love that. And your story, your journey, your business, I mean, Earthkind, what an incredible business you've created. And I'm so excited that we're going to get to share this with our community, our listeners. And for those that have tuned in, we'll make sure that there is a link in the show notes to your book, to your business. And just hope that we have lots more conversations and get to hear more about the growth and the next evolution of whatever it is that you're going to create. I'm so grateful for you being on the show today, Carrie. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
Have a great day, everybody, and feel free to tune in to the Reinvention Exchange for lots of fun content and stories and blogs and interviews with all of our guests. And happy reinventing, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.